Coming up, a couple of new smartphones, a new Android tablet, and a Bluetooth headset. It's time to watch.
Before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Before You Buy is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com now. Click the radio microphone and enter Before You Buy. And there we go. We got our technical director, Brian Burnett, doing double duty today on Before You Buy. This is the product review show on TWiT, where we give everybody who works at TWiT a chance to play with great new products and give you their review. Now, Brian is our technical director here for Before You Buy, does a lot of editing, is a great guy to have around, one of our newest employees.
Thank you.
He's also a motorcycle rider.
Yes.
In fact, you saw him before with his GoPro review, which was awesome.
Right. Really had fun playing with that, using it to do this review, too.
Yeah, so this is not a Bluetooth headset for just, like, riding around the car. This is for a helmet.
you can use it like that. You can phone calls in. Tony actually used it to make text messages, too.
Well, let's take a look. You got the review right now on Before You Buy.
Brian Burnett from TWiT here to show you the Senna Bluetooth headset, the SMH10. If you're wondering why I'm wearing a motorcycle helmet while I do this review, well, that's because it's a motorcycle Bluetooth headset that you can do intercom with your friends that you are riding with. So right now I'm actually using an app called Voice2Do to record this because there aren't a lot of voice recording apps in the Android market right now that allow you to use a Bluetooth headset. What this allows you to do is up to a four-way intercom-style conference call with anyone else who has the headset. You can't pair more than two headsets together if they're not the same model. So if you want to do four or more than two, you got to all have the same kind of headset. Me, Tony, and Burke tested these headsets out ourselves, and they work great. The sound really comes through clearly through your headset. The SMH10, when we were testing this out, it has up to a 900-meter range, and it worked great. Basically, it's a line-of-sight connection, so as soon as I would go around a corner or kind of go over a rise and I couldn't see Burke or Tony in my rearview mirror, I would lose audio, but as long as we kept contact with each other, sound was really clear. The headset does a great job of canceling wind noise. Another nice feature of this headset is you can wirelessly connect through Bluetooth to your phone, so you can make phone calls, you can listen to music. So let's talk about battery life. I've used this headset for about a week on my commute to work, about 30 minutes each way, and I've had to only charge it once in a week. So I think Senna claims about 10-hour battery life, and it works great. I mean, when I get to work, I just plug it in via USB and charge it up, and it doesn't take very long at all to do that. So installation is relatively easy, and it's not permanent. If you wanted to remove the headset, there's nothing permanent about it. This headset comes with really thin little speakers, and I was able to push them in behind my cheek pads, and they fit in there nicely and really have a lot of sound. You're not going to get, like, a big bassy tone out of them, but you're able to get the volume loud enough that you can hear it clearly even at freeway speeds. Now back to the studio for some pros and cons with Tony and Burke.
So we survived our motorcycle ride, and now we'll talk about the pros and the cons of the SMH10 and the SMH5. Burke, what were your pros?
Mine, we used the SMH10, Brian and I. The easy setup, easy installation, and good sound quality.
Cool. All right. So my pros for the SMH10 and the SMH5, they're both really light. You don't really feel it on the helmet after you have it installed, and the controls are really easy to modulate even when you have motorcycle gloves on. And Tony, your pros?
It's built very well. So it's made in Korea, and also the mic is actually very good. I use a lot of voice control on my cell phone via Bluetooth, and I was able to send text messages while I'm writing. I mean, don't do that. It's not safe. But I was doing voice. I was replying to text messages while I'm writing.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I didn't even try that.
That's impressive.
It did sound good.
The SMH 10, for reference, is MSRP is $399, and that's for the pair. And then for a pair of the SMH 5s, it's $249. If you were to buy individually, SMH 10 is $219, and individually for the SMH 5 is $129. You can get it for a little bit less on the street. Now for the cons, Bert.
Cons. I felt it was a little too expensive.
One of my cons would be, and it's not really a big con, is if you go around a turn or you go over like a hill and you lose sight of the person that you're doing the conference call with, you lose audio.
We had to go pretty far out of line of sight before we even broke up.
You really had to lag like really far behind before you lost connection.
Yeah. So my con is actually not a real con. It's just the installation Velcro stickies. They don't give any extra ones, so if you're stupid like me and you stick it on top of the helmet and you pull it off and it doesn't work anymore, that might be a problem for you.
Unless you're like Burke and you have makeshift.
I did the same thing. I just used bigger Velcro.
Use your own Velcro.
Yeah.
Bring your own Velcro. Yeah.
So is it buy, try, or don't buy? All right.
Two buys and a try.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for helping me with this review. This has been the SMH10 and the SMH5 from Senna Bluetooth headsets. See you next time on Before You Buy.
Thank you, Brian. You, Tony, and Burke, you're all bikers.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the Twit Motorcycle Gang.
That's awesome. Nice job, guys. and you were testing the SMH10, not the 5 on this.
Me and Burke did the 10, and Tony did the 5.
And your audio was coming from a 10.
Audio was coming from the 10.
Okay.
But from what Tony said, the audio is pretty
just
similar.
As good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only real difference is the 5 is a little bit smaller, battery life's not as long, but that's about the difference.
I'm impressed that, because Bluetooth is supposed to only go about 10 meters, 30 feet.
Yeah.
It seems like it went farther than that, so.
Yeah, they listed it 900 meters. I think that's like 930.
So they're doing something more than just plain old Bluetooth. There's something else going on. Maybe it is, in fact, line of sight.
It's
infrared or something.
But yeah, as long as you can see the other person, it worked great.
That's fantastic. Well, really neat. I would say definitely a buy. Even, you know, Burke's just a cheapskate.
Yeah. Okay.
on the Senna Bluetooth motorcycle headset. Well, actually, the biggest product we got into the Twit Brick House this week, of course, was the iPhone 5. We've all tried it, but we thought we'd let Sarah Lane, who's the host of i5 for the iPhone, be the first to deliver a review. Sarah?
Hey, everybody. Sarah Lane here with Twit for Before You Buy. I have been tasked with the very, very difficult job of reviewing the iPhone 5 for you all. I'm kidding, of course, because I'm kind of the iPhone person around here. We do a show about iPhones, i5. Leo and I talk about iOS on iPad Today each week. So it just kind of made sense that I would talk about the iPhone. But I want to try to give it as honest a review as possible because, of course, it's all about whether you should buy it or not and what you should know beforehand. First things first, this is LTE capable. This is a Verizon iPhone. Of course, I, living in San Francisco, have the option of going AT&T or Verizon. And Verizon LTE, although I've heard the same of AT&T, is really fast. So I noticed right off the bat that anything that requires internet is a lot faster, and in some cases, faster than the Wi-Fi that might be available in the same space. You've also got the longer iPhone itself. I call it the long phone because you've got another row on your home screen, and any other screen, of course, of apps to choose from. So this is the sort of thing that I have mixed feelings about so far. It seems okay. It doesn't make the phone too much bigger than my previous 4S, which I still love, by the way. But it does take some getting used to. It's almost like, there's a lot going on here. What do I put on my home screen? Because now it's a little bit more complicated. I think I'm going to get used to it. It is a little bit thinner. Not a ton thinner, but it's definitely thinner. And you really do feel the difference when you're holding it because it's also lighter. In fact, I've had people say, I think I need a case on this thing because it's like it's going to float away. It's so light. It's not really that much lighter, actually, when you actually look at the specs between the previous iPhones, 4 and the 4S being of pretty much the same weight, and the 5. There's not a huge difference, but because it's longer, because it's thinner, and because it's somewhat lighter, it really does feel like it's almost missing a battery in there or something, but it's not. By the way, what's cool about this is battery is almost always even an iPhone lover's biggest complaint. You start the day with a full charge. If you have a certain amount of brightness so that you're comfortable reading throughout the day and you use your phone fairly regularly, sometimes you don't get through the whole day. You might have to have a Mophie pack or something for additional battery. This phone, it's faster. It's actually got a faster internal computer. And the battery holds up. And in some cases, people say it's actually better than it was before. So you're actually getting the same quality with a better package. What else can we talk about? Headphone jack is on the bottom. I made a big deal about this when it came out and everyone went, yeah, whatever. iPod Touch has been doing that for a while. It's not a big deal. People are used to it. I still think that's strange. When I put my phone in my purse, the headphone jack comes out the top, and that's sometimes how I find it, and I've got my earbuds and the whole thing. So that's going to take some getting used to, too. But part of the reason that this happened is now because the dock connector changed from a 30-pin connector to a 9-pin down on the bottom, which is still proprietary, and some people are kind of mad that it's not micro SIM, but this is the way that it is. Now Apple has quite a bit of room down on the bottom to add stuff like a headphone jack. So the top of the iPhone is nice and fluid. You got your little on-off button. And that's about it. One thing that people have started to complain about, and this is particularly with the black models, is this anodized covering. We've got a nice new covering on the back, which looks lovely right out of the box and quickly gets a little scuffy looking. You know, it's not the same beautiful glass that the black and white iPhone 4S has had. This helps it be thinner and lighter. Yes, definitely. But a little bit more fragile and more susceptible to nicks and scrapes. Now, if you don't have a case with your iPhone, whether it's an iPhone 5 or any iPhone, you know that you're always susceptible to nicks and scrapes, but it sounds like these guys are a little bit more fragile than their predecessors. Word on the street is that the white iPhones hold up a little bit better, but I'm hearing complaints across the board, so that's something to keep in mind. Pros with this, if you're an iPhone lover already, it's just the logical next step. This phone is amazing. It's beautiful, it's thinner, it's lighter, it does everything that you want it to do, plus it's running the best version of iOS 6 there is, so it really is an upgrade. Cons, it's expensive, it's definitely fragile and might be a little too fragile for you, and if you were looking for a reason to switch to iOS and didn't have one already, I'm not sure that iOS 6 and a larger iPhone is going to really sway you. It's not that much of a difference from the ecosystem that Apple already had. It's a nice upgrade, but it's not anything revolutionary or different. For me, I think it's clear, it's an absolute buy, but I'm a little biased, but that's okay. Buy it.
You know, I have mixed feelings about this. Of course, if you have an iPhone, you're going to want the new iPhone no matter what. I mean, you're just going to buy the new iPhone, aren't you? This one is not so much better than the 4S that I would run out and get it. My recommendation would be buy if you have an earlier iPhone, but if you have a 4S, it might be worth a try. It's certainly true if you're in an LTE area, either with Sprint, AT&T, or Verizon, you should look at it. LTE is so much faster. The good news is the battery life, even on LTE, and I'm on LTE here at our brick house, does not diminish with LTE. Apple's done some magic, and it has at least as good battery life as the earlier iPhones. You know, it's a no-brainer if you're an iPhone user. If you're not, I'd have to say you'd probably want to look at the top-of-the-line Android phones. And I'm going to show you one in just a moment that has some pretty amazing battery life. But first, let's talk about our sponsor for the show today. Let me show you Stamps.com, ladies and gentlemen. Stamps.com, it's basically the post office on demand. Why wait till the post office is open to buy and print postage? Why wait to mail things till the post office is open? You can do everything you could do at the post office from your own desk using Stamps.com. Stamps.com lets you buy postage any time of the day or night on demand, lets you print that postage on your own printer. You don't need special inks or a postage meter, and even lets you mail stuff. Things like international mail or larger than 13-ounce packages that normally you'd have to go to the post office. With Stamps.com, you don't. The mail carrier comes to you and picks it up. You can even schedule free pickups, so you never really have to leave for the post office. And I got to say, I love this digital scale. We ended up getting two stamps.com account, so we'd have two USB scales, up to 25 pounds on this scale. You never have to guess about how much postage you need. You just plop the letter or package on there and print the postage out. Stamps.com prints the mailing label, too. It'll even print right on the envelope. And one of the nice things about printing on the envelope is you can have your logo, the company logo. It prints the address. If you use QuickBooks, Etsy, Amazon, eBay, it gets the address right off the page. It makes it much, much easier for you to do your mailing. This is the mailer. This is a pro tip for anybody who does a lot of mailing. Stamps.com. If you want to try it right now, we have a no-risk trial offer for you that's fantastic. Go to stamps.com. Don't take that $80 offer. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and get the $110 value, the $55 in free postage. The digital scale, you just pay shipping and handling, about $5. To make up for that, they give you a $5 supply kit and a four-week trial. Cancel it anytime. Pay nothing if you choose. The scale is yours to keep no matter what, and it is a handy thing to have. Stamps.com. Try it free today. Stamps.com. Click the I heard it on the radio or I heard it on a podcast microphone, and use our offer code before you buy to get that special deal. Before you buy. Stamps.com. We thank them for their support of Before You Buy. So I've got the newest Droid phone. This is from Motorola and Verizon. This is the Droid Razr M. And this is kind of an interesting phone for a number of reasons. First of all, very thin bezel. So even though this is fairly small in the hand, you still get a 4.3-inch screen. It's kind of an odd resolution, 960 by 840. So, but it's good enough to do 720p video on its side. It's running Jelly Bean. So, I'm sorry, it's not. It's running Ice Cream Sandwich. I think, you know, you can always tell by clicking, yeah, see, when you click that Google search bar and you get this instead of Google Now, you know you're running Ice Cream Sandwich. But it does have some nice Motorola features. This is one of the Motorola widgets, lets you spin these little dials here. The screen, gorgeous. It is an LCD screen, but works very well at every angle. The color's good, saturation's good, size is good. And so it's a smallish, heavy phone, dense phone that gives you a big screen and a fairly compact package. But the thing I found most amazing is the battery life. And that's a good thing because I don't think you can get this back open to replace the battery. But take a look. I did some battery testing. I was able to get on standby 4 days, 3 hours, and 53 minutes, and I still had 13% charge left. This phone just sips. Yes, Wi-Fi was on. It was downloading email. It was updating my calendar. I wasn't making any phone calls, but I was using the phone, and I got 4 days on a single charge. That is unheard of. They put a fairly hefty battery in here, but this isn't even the Razr Max, the one that they're claiming great battery life. There will be a Razr Max HD with a much bigger screen out soon on Verizon. I also got very good LTE performance. Now, your mileage will absolutely vary depending on network congestion and where you are. You may not even have LTE in your neck of the woods, but if you do, look at the download speeds I was getting. The top there is Wi-Fi. The bottom is LTE, 22.9 megabits per second down, 17 megabits up. That's better than my Wi-Fi at home. Even the ping time is a decent 58 milliseconds. So once again, Verizon LTE is just spectacular. This is a great LTE phone with much better than great battery life. A nice little phone, and it's one of their least expensive phones. It's $99. This is kind of the low-cost Droid. I'm not a huge fan of the Motorola interface, but it doesn't get in the way too much. No, notice, for instance, if I swipe to the right on most Android phones, I'd get another screen. In this case, I get the quick settings page. But that's not so bad once you get used to it. You can add more screens, more blank pages just by tapping the screen and put more icons on there. And so, and home, of course, always brings you back to the home page. So, you know, you get used to the interface. It very much is kind of almost the Jelly Bean interface, hence my confusion. Pros, it's a great price. It's in tremendous battery life, beautiful, very high quality screen, and a big screen in a fairly small package. So if you're looking for an easy phone to use, remember Apple's touting how easy it is to thumb around. Yeah, here you go. You got a 4.3-inch screen. You could thumb around just as easily as Apple's 4-inch screen and for a lot less money. I have to say the only con, of course, is that it's not using Jelly Bean. It's the Ice Cream Sandwich version of Android. And the Motorola enhancements, as usual, are somewhat less than enhancing. Nevertheless, a great phone if you're looking for kind of a mid-ranged Android phone with more than amazing battery life. This is the Droid Razr M, an absolute buy if that's what you're in the market for. Now I'm going to head on over to my buddy Jason Howell, who's tapping away on yet another Android tablet. How many Android tablets are there?
I feel like I'm getting one of these at least every other week.
Yeah.
But, in some cases, every week.
Now, this is from the king of Android tablets, Samsung. They were the the first to do them. Now, not maybe the best, but is this the 10-1?
Note.
Note.
So this is not the Tab. This is the Galaxy Note, of course. That,
so that means it has,
that it has the S Pen, yeah, which is, as I've been corrected on my review that I posted early on YouTube, not just a stylus, but it's more a, you know, an integral part of the Wacom digitizer that's a part of the Note series.
Let's take a look.
Let's do that.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here with the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1. There is no doubt that they've been successful with the Note series. They're obviously looking to move that into the tablet spectrum. Let's see if they were successful in that. Let's take a look at the specs. This has a 1.4 gigahertz quad-core Exynos processor loaded with 2 gigs of RAM. It has a 10.1-inch screen at 1280 by 800 resolution. It's Wi-Fi only in the U.S. There are also models that support HSPA Plus overseas. Micro SD card slot, which stores up to 64 gigs of storage. There's an IR blaster at the very top, so you can use it as a universal remote. Underneath, you'll find the signature S Pen, as Samsung likes to call it. And it's running Android 4.0 Ice Cream Sandwich. Samsung says Jelly Bean will be arriving very soon. All right, now let's take a look at the design of the device. Obviously, Samsung is going for the no confusion with an iPad type approach. As you can see here, there are two speakers front facing at the top. These speakers are very loud because they're facing out at all times, and you kind of get that stereo separation, which was very nice. But overall, anything potentially positive is kind of negated by an overly plastic feel and hollowness. I mean, things bend in the center when you pick it up. You can hear it creak underneath your fingers, and you know, even when you're picking it up with fragile hands, and the plastic overall just feels very cheap. The S Pen does dock in the bottom, however, and I'd say for tablets that require or at least have an accessory of a stylus, it's nice to be able to dock that in the tablet. It feels more like a unified product with the tablet. Now, taking a look at the display, the resolution, 1280 by 800. Most tablets that are coming out right now in the same price range as this tablet are sporting much higher resolutions. That higher definition standard is being set, and on this one, it really stands out. The display just does not look good. Now, the cameras, the 1.9 megapixel front-facing camera, as well as the 5 megapixel rear-facing camera, just produce photos that look hazy, cloudy, little to no sharpness, and that's even in great light. And actually, the video didn't look much better. So overall, I'd say the camera hardware on this tablet is pretty bad. Okay, so as taking a look at the performance of the tablet, I was actually pretty impressed with that for the most part. When it comes to things like browsing the web, everything moved very smoothly. Gaming, I went to my go-to game, which is Dead Trigger, of course, and that performed beautifully on here and played without a hiccup. Where it kind of broke down a little bit is actually Samsung's TouchWiz interface, their overlay that they put on most of their devices. It's on here in full force as you're skipping around and kind of clutters up the experience. Things look very different than they do on a vanilla ice cream sandwich approach, but overall I just found it to kind of slow things down. As far as battery performance is concerned, 7,000 milliamp hour battery under here, and the battery is actually very bulky and totally does a great job powering this thing. I hardly had to really think about it. I would plug it in, but there would be times where I would forget to plug it in and it would retain in its standby mode very, very well. Now, the S Pen that I have here is definitely a differentiator for this tablet. It's a pressure-sensitive pen, and Samsung touts around 1,000 levels of sensitivity. The shape of the pen actually prevents it from rolling away, but overall, the pen is just very cheap feeling. It has this multi-purpose button on the side, but it's really limited to a couple of uses, and you can't program the button, but there are no batteries, so that's a plus. All right, so let's take a look at the pros of the Galaxy Note 10.1 tablet. The S Pen is definitely a differentiator. It's very unique. The performance of the tablet as a whole was pretty impressive for most tasks, and the battery is ample. Now the cons. The design, though well thought out in some areas, like the speaker placement, completely ignores pitfalls in others. The display resolution just doesn't compare at all with similar sized and priced tablets. The camera produces fuzzy, grainy, hazy pictures and videos. And finally, TouchWiz is impossible to ignore, and you can't help but feeling that it's kind of slowing the whole process down. Overall, whether you should buy this tablet really depends on how badly you need this stylus. Sorry, Samsung, I know you're calling it an S Pen, but it's a stylus. If that's something that you absolutely need in your tablet, this might be one of the only players in town, so you might have to go with it. Otherwise, I would absolutely recommend that you not buy the Galaxy Note 10.1. There are other tablets that are similarly priced that give you a lot more bang for your buck and just are a lot more fun to use than the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 tablet. You can catch my reviews on All About Android at twit.tv/AAA. And thank you so much for checking out my review of the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1.
The long version of that review is available on YouTube, youtube.com/twit, or on your Google Plus. It's a lot longer.
Yeah, it's almost twice as long because I had to cut this down for Before You Buy, but I definitely go into detail as far as the software, specifically the software surrounding the S Pen, because there's a lot of TouchWiz specific, made by Samsung apps that work directly with the S Pen. And that's very important for people who have a need to use a tablet with an enhanced kind of stylus.
Well, we saw that with the best-selling Galaxy Note, and we're going to see it even more so with the Galaxy Note 2. Mm-hmm. Now, that's got a Wacom digitizer. That's one of the reasons the screen isn't as good as it could be.
Yeah, exactly. Supposedly, they aren't able to increase the resolution because of that digitizer overlay. And I think it's important for me to point out from the review, and this is something that I probably should have put in there, if what you're looking for is a tablet.
If you want to draw?
If you have a specific need for a Wacom digitizer and you're looking for an Android tablet, A, this is one of the only games in town, and B, it'll probably do a lot of those things pretty sufficiently. People are pretty passionate about it if they're really into the Wacom game. Yeah. I think my review, my recommendation for not buying really goes to everyone else. So if I could do it again, I'd say if you're looking for a stylus slash Wacom digitizer capability, try it. Otherwise, don't buy it, only because you're going to be paying the same amount as something like another tablet I reviewed, the Asus Transformer Pad Infinity, which is excellent for the same cost. You actually get much better specs, and just for a general tablet, for general use, you'd be much wiser spending your money on a different tablet.
It's a little bit Samsung's fault here. They probably should build this as a specialty tablet designed for people who want to use a stylus and want the Wacom digitizer, not as a general purpose 10-inch tablet. Is the Asus your pick if you had...
If I had to pick one 10-inch tablet around the $500 price range, absolutely. That Asus Transform Pad Infinity is pretty awesome.
So a qualified don't buy on the Samsung 10.1 Note. Do buy it if that's what you're looking for, a digitizing tablet with a stylus.
You're probably going to have the patience and the time to really dig into it and pick apart some of the software that's specifically tied into the S Pen.
And I understand the passion because I was a Galaxy Note user and loved it, and I can't wait for the Note 2. I'm looking forward to your review of that. That's going out soon, and that's going to be a very interesting kind of smaller version.
Yes.
Of this Galaxy 10.1 Note.
Absolutely.
All right, well, that's it for Before You Buy. I want to thank all our reviewers, and we had a bunch of them, besides Sarah Lane and Jason Howell, who, of course, is the producer of TNT and a host on All About Android. We also had our triumvirate of trike riders, Brian Burnett, our technical director, Tony Wang, and Burke McQuinn. Thank you all for reviewing those products. Thank you, Jason Howell, for being here, and thank you for watching. Remember, each week we do this show, so you know what to buy and what not to buy. So make sure you watch Before You Buy. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.